turn. Those of you who came to church expecting to hear a sermon, I'm happy to tell you, you don't have to sit through listening to me talk again. I think it's really important that we share our stories with one another. Times in our lives that have been difficult, times that we have found blessing, times that have been blah, those are sometimes some of the most challenging times. And so what I asked last week was that you all think of a time when you found God's presence in your life, maybe when you sought God's presence and heard nothing, and to share with us a little vignette of what that was like. And I have to confess that when we have had these services in the past, I have had a plant. I have had someone who I knew would get up and talk and break that really awkward time when we're all sitting here going, I don't have one today. It is up to you and God. So I invite you please to come forward and to use this microphone so that people can really hear you. Thank you.
Surprised to find myself up here, but so in the year 2000, I had a very difficult medical situation. I had lost about a quarter of my body weight. I was in Fletcher Allen at the time, 129 pounds, and they knew what was wrong with me, but they didn't know what they were going to do. So I've been, at this point, I'm really not conscious of the day-to-day activities. You know, I'm just sort of lying there trying to figure out, how do I survive this? I got a six-year-old son at home and a woman I love. What am I going to do? And as often, they get you in these gurneys, and you're going to go get a test here or a test there, and they wheel me out into the hall, and I'm the only one in the hall. Just me on this gurney in my thoughts, and I'm like, what is going on? And then all of a sudden, this woman walks down the hall, and I'm going to get emotional, but I couldn't recognize her. I was that far gone. And she stopped and said, would you like me to pray? And I said, oh, please. So I had ulcerative colitis, so I no longer have a large intestine. It had been removed. But at that time, I still had it, and it was very sick. And she put her hands over me. And together we were just, I and my thoughts, and she was praying aloud. And I felt like I had been filled with light. I felt like I was being healed right then and there. And then she walked away. And I'm here, so obviously it worked. But the other part of the story is, which is really neat, so for 12 years I wondered, who is that woman? Who was that woman? Who was that woman? You know, I was really drugged. I don't think I'd recognize her in front of a lineup. So fast forward till 2013, and I got asked to attend the community rounds at Fletcher Allen. That's when they take people from the community, and you get to go. You actually walk into operating rooms. You can do whatever you want. I asked to go to pastoral services because I just thought, oh, that was such an impactful moment for me. I want to see what they do. So I walked down the steps, and I walk into the pastoral services, and I knew instantly that the woman I've been looking for 12 years was standing right in front of me. So I threw my arms around her, and I started bawling. She was crying. She does not remember it. I remember it vividly, and she was there. She's there one day a month. She comes up from South Carolina to do this, and I saw her in that moment. That was the only time that month she was going to be there. That was my angel, and God sent that angel to me.
cast you right out of the room. I got married in 1956, and by the time I was 30, which wasn't far after that, I had three lovely children. And one morning, some years later, maybe 14, our son, who then was had a room built in the basement for him so that he would be, he was in high school and the girls were upstairs. And one morning he came bustling up the stairs, he was a freshman in high school, and said to me, "Mom, what do you think this is?" And he had what looked, my grandmother in Colorado had a goiter, which was a bad thing. And I looked at him, and in my usual fast, quippy thing, I blasted off, "Oh, don't worry about that, Peter. It's probably just a tumor." And it was. And he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 1973, which I found out pretty soon was probably not only life-threatening, but likely to be. And so our doctor, we lived then in central New Jersey, so we were 50 miles from New York. And she and I talked, our pediatrician was a woman, and she and I talked, and we decided the best place for him was New York Hospital in the city, because the Princeton Hospital didn't have, had never had a case of childhood cancer. He was 14 that year. And he went into New York right then, and so I began my daily routine of farming out the two little girls on their way home from school. They were 9 and 12 at the time, and I quit my job because I was working part-time in a tiny town where everybody knew me, and so it didn't matter. And 5 weeks later, he came home for a week, even though he was terribly ill. And on May the 12th of 1973, he was back in the hospital, and they called us that night to say that Peter had died. And I turned to the people, we were having dinner at someone's house, and I turned to my husband, or to the host of where we were, and said, how could he die? I wasn't there, said I wisely. And as in, when those kinds of things happen to you, you don't know what to do, and you plainly put yourself in the hands of God and hope that somebody will hold your hand and help you, because you surely can't do it alone. And as things will go, the next day was Mother's Day, the Sunday morning, and I had to get up and pretend how glad I was that those little girls gave me pansies for Mother's Day, as they have every year, and still continue to do so, though it's been over 40 years now. And they're all in their 50s, and that's pretty remarkable. And I've, for probably 2 years, every time I set the table, if I were the one doing it, I got out 5 plates. It took a long time not to do that. And I also had on the wall beside my bed pictures of the children in little strips of brass frames of all three of them every birthday, so that I had a history. And I made Joel take them down. I took down all the pictures so I wouldn't have to look at them, because it was too hard. But we were in a church that was a Presbyterian church in New Jersey. They're short on congregational churches there. And for those 5 weeks that I was commuting to New York on the bus, they provided the food for me. And we were so ungrateful, I guess, is the only word I can think of, the children, that is. They began to be fussy about what casserole they would eat and which one they wouldn't. And if it had mandarin oranges in it, didn't have a prayer, they went right into the place where all bad things in their eyes go. But we survived that terrible, terrible thing, and even though it's, as I say, it's been some 40 years, certainly God held my hand, because here I am again in the most loving church that I could have found, that is so like in background and in feeling of the church that I was in at that time when Peter died. And It is a wonderful place to be. You have uplifted me through my husband's dementia and many other, my lung cancer and all kinds of other things. And so I know that God has been with me, and it's a wonderful place to be. Thank you.
So about a year ago, I'm thinking I stood at an occasion like this, only it was up there, and told you that I had a concern about my sister who drank too much and it was affecting her relationships with others around her. And so I want to give you an update about that, but I also want to tell you about her son. And my sister and I and her son gathered at her home in South Carolina, in Greenville, and had a discussion with her last spring that was hard, to say the least. But she was remarkably receptive because we certainly came to her with love in our hearts. And her son looked to me, and I was honored that he did, to say, can we do something about, can I take your lead? What do we want, what do you want to do? So that relationship is improved a fair amount. It's not, nothing ever changes overnight for the best, but it's, I wanted to tell you about her son who grew up, who is now about 40. Is he about 40, Ginny? He was an awkward child and not coordinated, gangly, double-jointed, and exhibited, the medical people in the audience will understand, Marfan syndrome, exhibited traits of that, which is a connective tissue disorder that affects many things, anything that is, uses connective tissue, like your heart, your eyes, your ears, all that, there's little pieces of the connective tissue. So he didn't see well. At a young age, he got hit in the eye with a baseball, and because of the weakness of his eye, it really affected the sight in that eye and the eye and the cornea. But he persisted in his life with trying anything and working hard. And his family life growing up was awkward. It wasn't perfect. None of our family lives are perfect necessarily. But he found himself going to Georgetown for undergraduate, and then found himself in University of Chicago for law school. And all the while, his body, he's like 6'3 or so and gangly and still kind of awkward, has like size 50 feet. And but he's always got this marvelous attitude. He's not particularly strong or particularly coordinated, but one year he decided to bike across the country after, I think it was right after law, no, it was in between law school and high and college, I believe. And he was at one of these rides for, I think it was for lungs or no, or vision or something. That's not the point. The point is he was always like the last one in at the end of the day of riding in this very supported ride, and he was raising money and all this stuff. But he had this attitude of, I can do this, despite his disabilities and challenges. And one time he heard this thing, and I had never heard it before. I do some riding. I don't do ride across the country and stuff. But he heard that there was a tradition, if you're riding across the country, you ride across the Mississippi with no clothes on. And so he solicited the help of some friends on this ride, and everybody was really, you know, appreciated his I can do it attitude. And so at one side of the Mississippi, they were riding west to east, He handed all his clothes to somebody. They rode across the bridge. And he rode across, I think it was near Minneapolis. I think they were at the major crossing at Minneapolis. And he got the other side, causing an uproar on the highway, I guess, to some degree or another, some of which he knew about, some of which he just could imagine. And he put his clothes back on, and a little while later, a police car comes by and stops this pack of riders and said, "We heard that there was somebody riding naked across the bridge and on a bike, and we're looking for him." You know, like, you should not do this. And, you know, if you're riding a bike, your private parts aren't that visible. But anyways, it was neat. Not that it looks good or anything. But anyways, I don't think of it as that revealing or anything. Everybody said, "Oh, nobody here but us church mice," or whatever. And so that's an example of his just-go-for-it attitude. And whenever I want to tell you that right now, he eventually became blind because his eyes deteriorated. He wears hearing aids. His hearing is not particularly good. He, interestingly, was raised in a Baptist church in Atlanta, but at his own volition in college, he went to Georgetown. I suppose this might have had some influence, and he decided to become Catholic. And he got confirmed in the Catholic Church. When he moved to Chicago, he worked in a law firm for a short while, and he became blind at some point along the way there. I can't remember the exact pattern of this. And he had had difficulty with his job, and they moved to California to do something else. Oh, he had met an interesting lady from Poland at in the church he attended. And she spoke very little English, but she was very accomplished herself in her studies. And they got married. They have two kids now. He is raising the kids, going into Chicago on a regular basis to do a part-time job with a seeing eye dog. And when I think of difficulties I have in my life and challenges I face and how it depresses me and causes me to be a less than ideal person to be around, I think of Andrew and his attitude, which continues to this day to be one of great, great positivity and raising beautiful children and being a father to these children who are normal, healthy, and his wife obviously does a great deal around the house. She has a full-time job. She is a lawyer, too. I think we all can take inspiration from people in our lives that sometimes exhibit traits we wish we had, but, you know, by being around them, we can absorb them and have a model to live by. Thank you.
I would follow up with that. I'm Ebeth Scatcherd, and some of you knew my mom, Betty McCarthy, and I just, she was my best friend, and she moved to Wake Robin from Southern California to Northern Vermont when she was 88 years old, and lived her life with gusto. I was very fortunate to be raised in a very loving family in St. Louis, and my grandfather was the Bishop of Missouri, Episcopal, And one of our closest friends growing up, one of mine, was the minister's, our family's minister's children. And we would, instead of playing school, we would play church. And there were wonderful times going up and down the aisles or whoever. And then we would do all sorts of, anyway, let go of that. But then my dad passed away when I was 14. My church and school communities just gathered round and were very, very supportive, loving to me, to all of us. As Mom and I grew together, I mean, we were home alone together because my brother and sister are that much older than I. So that time is when we became so incredibly close. Mom later was remarried, and her husband was a Christian Scientist. Mom decided to truly learn who he was by learning about his faith. And she eventually became an Episcopalian Christian Scientist. later in life, she had a pacemaker. And, you know, she enjoyed her evening glass of wine. but she went to, when she moved here, I took her to the Christian Science Church in Burlington. Or we came here. And it was very special. The strongest memory, that I have was the last few days of her life when she would, she had just been in bed, not sitting up, and the hospice choir came. And they surrounded her bed, and all of our family was there. And they beautifully sang to her beautifully. And suddenly, she sat straight up, opened her eyes, and did the sign of the cross, or conducted, it doesn't matter which. She lay back down and was at peace. And God was with her and all of us. And it was a beautiful moment. Mom lost two of her husbands, her only husbands, her loves of her life. Both of them had heart attacks. And I often said, Mom, no, not often. I asked her how she did it. She would look at me and say, what choice did I have? Go forward.
I am humbled by your honesty and by your acceptance of these stories, by those who have shared, and by, can you feel it, that kind of quivering nerve of God's presence here among us today. It is a blessing. You are a blessing to one another. So, hymns. Yes. Wait, no, we've got one right here. 400.